Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and today we are bringing you a program featuring Dr. Tim Clinton as our guest host. Dr. Clinton is the president of the nearly 50,000-member American Association of Christian Counselors, AACC. He is also the executive director of the Center for Counseling and Family Studies at Liberty University. He also hosts a daily radio program called Life, Love, and Family, and is recognized as a world leader in faith and mental health issues. At the fall AACC conference, Dr. Clinton interviewed Dr. Ed Stetzer about hidden mental illness in the church. Dr. Stetzer holds the Billy Graham Chair of Church, Mission, and Evangelism at Wheaton College and serves as executive director of the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism. He is also the co-host of the Breakpoint This Week radio program and an interim pastor at Moody Church. Their conversation about mental illness is a great reminder that believers are called to bear one another's burdens. Let's hear it now on today's edition of Family Talk.
Ed, thank you for joining us here on Family Talk. I really appreciate you being in studio
with
us.
Excited to be here, and thank you as always for having me.
You know, the truth is, Ed, you've been traveling all over the country. God's got you in some significant roles. You've done a lot of research related to mental health issues and more, but I think you and I both agree the pace, the pressure, in a lot of ways, the pain of modern-day life has taken over. It's really affected the church. People inside the church, I mean, Ed, what are some of the biggest issues that you see people wrestling with that maybe the church really isn't talking a lot about?
Well, you know, I think part of it is, you know, I mean, Jesus said when it rains on the just and the unjust, right? So as if we could take that picture, as it's raining on our society, the busyness, the pressure, the sin issues, the idolatry, they impact all of us. And so that we should expect to see some of that in the church. Now, what do? Well, discipleship, spiritual formation, mental health issues, these are all things the church has to address to kind of work against the torrent of the rain that keeps coming on top of us. So what are some things we see? Well, I mean, we talk about pornography, right? You know, we talk about the brokenness that's there. We can talk about challenges within marriages and the situations that are there. So family issues, and those are just a couple of things that impact the family in some cases, but family issues are real. The stress issues are real. And again, Christians aren't immune from mental health struggles, which we've been talking about.
They get depressed. They're wrestling with OCD, right. Obsessive compulsive disorder, maybe battling histories of abuse, pain of different sorts. And Ed, they bring it in. They're looking for relief. The truth is, most people still seek out a pastor, priest, or rabbi when they're hurting, they're going through a mental health crisis in their life. Talk to us about what you've learned in the research. Where is the church on mental health?
Well, you know, because police or pastors are almost always the first responders in a true mental health crisis, right? So, and some of the police have more training than pastors on how to respond, how to de-escalate, how to walk through, how to refer. And not always, you know, some pastors have the training, some don't. So we did a study at Lifeway Research. Until recently, I was the executive director there at Lifeway Research and now partner with them. And so now I'm at Wheaton College. But one of the things we talked about in this study, we surveyed 1,000 pastors, right? So these are Protestant pastors, all different denominations, evangelical, mainline, whatever. And we asked them some questions. For example, what was their awareness? What was their connection? Actually, about 38% strongly agreed that they were equipped to identify a person dealing with an acute mental illness situation, right? And to refer to a medical professional. When we put strongly and somewhat agree, we actually get into the 80%. It's not that pastors are unaware or feel that they can't help in some way, and often that's a referral. But the issue is, it appears to me that they're not talking about it. So if 80%+ say, you know, we're ready, I can help. But what we find is that the most common answer to, we ask them how often they spoke, how often do these pastors talk in sermons or large group messages about mental illness? 66%, 2/3 said rarely, once a year or never. So they sort of feel themselves prepared to help, but they're not speaking it into the church. And what happens is that creates the stigma that we talked about, right? Well, we talk about a lot.
What's the reason why they don't go there?
Because we don't know.
The truth is, if they don't talk about it, there is a stigma for those who are wrestling with those issues, because even though, quote, they're prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, because sermons break stigmas. When you get up and you say, here's what I'm struggling with, all of a sudden it's okay to struggle, right? And so here's what part of what we have to do. We have to break the stigma of mental illness in our churches and have our churches be a safe place, a Christ-honoring place, a Spirit-filled place, a God of mercy place, where they ultimately themselves, well, can talk about some of these issues. I write a column regularly for Christianity Today, and I'll often try to take, when a Christian leader says, I'm struggling with mental illness, I actually have them guest write a post for me. Why? Because it breaks the stigma. It's not something you have to suffer in silence. And all of us, you know, have this sense that we have to, well, there'll be times we struggle, but there are different ways to struggle. There's a spiritual struggle, there's mental illness, there's different expressions of that. But I'm struck by Galatians 6:2, right? So it says, carry one another's burdens. I want us to be not just a caring church. I want us to be a carrying church. I want us to carry one another's burdens. At times, Tim, I'm going to need you to carry my burden, right?
Absolutely.
And for others, it's going to be longer term because of a mental health struggle, a mental illness issue. And either way, we want to be not just a caring church, but a carrying church. And that's my concern for our listeners is they'd help create a place and a space in their church where we help carry people at times or for longer times through life. Because that's, listen to what it says. Paul writes, carry one another's burdens. In this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. So a church that's fulfilling the law of Christ is carrying the burdens of others. So let's make safe place for being a carrying church.
In our program, that's where we really want to go. We want to challenge churches to move to a mental health type ministry, to own responsibility of being in the lives of these people. But Ed, I'm going to ratchet it back just for a moment. Yeah. People are turning up the dial saying, you know, wait a second. We've got a family member who's, you know, somebody said they're bipolar.
Yeah.
We've got a family member wrestling with an eating disorder.
Sure.
We've got a family member who, prescription drug addiction. And everybody's hush-hush. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
Let me come back to what else did you find out about the church in your research?
Yeah. So we found out for a lot of churches, they have some resources, right? So, for example, we ask pastors, in this sample, the Lifeway Research sample, we ask pastors, we ask family members of people with a diagnosed mental illness, the same questions, and then we ask people diagnosed with the mental illness who attended church, Protestant churches, the same question. So the pastors, we ask them, well, what preparation or what do you have to help? And what we found is for example, a lot of people said they had referrals, which we think is great. We're for that, partnering with this. Now, we want to acknowledge and recognize that we want to take people to the scriptures. We want them to rely on the work of the Spirit. We also want to recognize that we can partner with mental health practitioners in our community. But here's what we found. 68% of pastors said their church provides care for the mentally ill or their families by maintaining lists of experts to refer people to. Now, lots of other things, but here's what's interesting, Tim, and this is what gets to the gap, right? So pastors, over two-thirds, 68%, remember that number, listeners, 68% said that they maintain lists. But when you ask family members of the persons who struggle with mental illness, does your church have a list to refer? 28% said that they did. So that's a 40% gap. Most people don't know. These are people who know. These are the family members of people who struggle with mental illness don't know that the pastor has a list, and 68% of the pastors say they have a list.
That's a huge disconnect.
It is. So what's happening is, again, this is where the stigma and the shame stays, because pastors are like, well, yeah, if they come to us, I'll refer. I can help. The pastors are overwhelmingly say, you know, we can connect with counseling. Pastors overwhelmingly say there's a time and place sometimes for medication. It's a bit of a myth that Christians have sort of walked away from this. Percentage-wise, it's just not there about issues even of medication. As necessary, there are cautions, and they're rightful cautions. But what the fact is, that difference tells us that I think pastors are talking about it and feel somewhat prepared amongst themselves, but they're not standing before their congregation. And I kind of left when we did this research, and I was a bit convicted, and I said, I need to make sure that I mention. So when I was preaching through a passage in Philippians chapter 4, and I mentioned, you know, it talks about being anxious for nothing, etc. So I said, here's some ways you can overcome anxiety and worry. And then I said, and it reflected back on a conversation we had in your offices in Lynchburg, Virginia, is that if you are trying to work through this, you're following the biblical principles, and you find you're stuck, you can't get out of this, whatever it may be, this oppression, this anxiety, this worry, there may be something more than a spiritual struggle. And so I used your exact language, and it may have been, one of the few times that I went right from a scripture passage to, and I said, we have people that we can connect you with. Why? I didn't want 28% of people to say, yeah, the church has lists, but vast majority don't know. Well, I knew we had lists. So that'd be my encouragement, is to help pastors. Most of our listeners are not going to be pastors, but to help pastors and maybe themselves communicate before churches that we care. This is a safe place. We can help connect you with others. And mind you, we're not just going to get rid of you either. This is a community.
It's ministry.
It's ministry together.
Ed,
exactly.
You're really well known in church growth, church leadership, those lanes.
Sure, more of what I do.
How did you get attracted, and why are you so passionate about this particular area of ministry?
It's funny. People ask me that all the time.
Sure.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, how could I not be?
There you go.
Now, there are some personal stories here. My aunt, one of my favorite aunts, brilliant. Like, well, what was going on with her? She was a lawyer and a doctor. Her name was, she took her own life, but her name was Margaret Bannon. And she's just brilliant, right? So we have Elton John's personal physician at times and all this. Who's a lawyer and a doctor? Smartest person I knew. And she was influential on my life. And if you read the news story that ultimately came out about what really led to ultimately her making some decisions that of taking her own life, committing suicide, it actually came to an arrest. She was arrested by the police department, and alcohol, tobacco, and firearms for smuggling weapons to Ireland. Quoting right from the newspaper, this is here from the Orlando Sentinel, where she lived. It says, a Winter Park woman who holds degrees in law and medicine faces federal charges on shipping guns, blah, blah, blah. Dr. Margaret Bannon comes, arrest comes, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, Bannon does not practice medicine and has not practiced law since suffering an unspecified disability in the mid-1980s. She takes, quote, a considerable amount of medication, unquote, her attorney said, and it goes on from here. Here's the deal. What was driving her, and they couldn't even say it in the story because we can't even speak the words, was she was mentally ill. Nobody would speak about it. It was something we didn't talk about in our family. Ultimately,
the secret
became part of the stigma, part of the shame. So for me, and then as a pastor, I could give other stories. But here's the deal. Who doesn't have a story like that?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, all of our listeners are like, well, I know an aunt, or I know an uncle, or I know a kid. And here's all around us is this pain. And if there's one place that ought to be the place where we carry one another through the painful seasons of life, it ought to be the Church of Jesus Christ.
And we're as sick as our secrets.
Yeah.
And Ed, you mentioned a word earlier too, and I want you to go back to it because it fits here. Those who have this journey in their life, in their family, in their church community, shame's a big word.
It really is.
They either get overwhelmed by it or they're shamed by those in the church. They're ostracized. They're outliers. Yeah. They're different.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll send you down to other people,
right, with the lab coats and all that sort of stuff. And this is where it gets tricky, Tim, because I'm so thankful for you. I'm thankful for Dr. Dobson, the ministry of kind of talking about these things. But the reality is, I actually think in some ways, evangelical Christians, which is going to be the vast majority of our audience, are actually less comfortable talking about these things than society as a whole. We did a study, and you cited it in one of your talks at Life by Research, where we found that Christians think that prayer and Bible study alone can heal mental illness. Now, we're both believe that God can do the miraculous.
Absolutely.
But the idea here is that if you have a mental illness and you're in a church, something wrong with your faith, there's something you're not in your Bible, and that just doesn't reflect reality. I mean, if you have a broken leg, people don't blame you and say, well, you have a broken leg because you're broken and you're a Christian, something wrong with your Christian faith. Well, the same ought to be true for real diagnosed mental illnesses that actually can impact our lives. And it creates this shame cycle, right? It gets worse and worse and worse when you can't say, I'm struggling with this, but I want to be in a community. So again, I want to come back for us to being a caring church, carrying one another's burdens. And I think all of our listeners can be part of that for short periods of time. Sometimes we're going to be carried. Being a carrying church, I think, is key.
You make a statement. The church looks most like Jesus when they care for the hurting,
the hurting
people.
Exactly.
You know, let's stop for a moment right here, Ed, and say this. I mean, I want you to speak directly to the listener.
Yeah.
She's out there. He's out there. And they're broken. And this is their story. And they're stuck. As a matter of fact, they may have given up on the church. What do you say to him or her right now? First of all, about the journey they're in.
Yeah.
And what about God in this process and how he works?
It's great. It's a great question. Well, first, let me just say that if the church has not been there or the church has been part of the hurt, I'm sorry. And I know that for a lot of people, that's simply true.
That's a tough
true.
Statement.
But it's true. It has to be said. I mean, I've been hurt by the church, right? And I think I've hurt people in church. Now, sometimes I know it. I bet I've hurt some people in church that I didn't even know I hurt. Mm-hmm. I bet there are people hurting people at home right now who don't go to church because of some interaction with me that I don't know of. But I'm guessing the same thing might be true of some of our listeners. So here's what I would say. Whenever there's people, there's going to be hurt. We're going to hurt one another. Sometimes it's bad. And I'm not saying that it's just because some casual thing.
And hey, throw something in. Hurt people. Hurt people.
I've heard that before.
Yes.
Exactly right. So, and it's true. So here we go. We're going to be just like in your family, right? My family members have hurt me. I've hurt my family members. But what happens then is it creates that, what the Bible sometimes calls that root of bitterness, right? But then that can be accompanying with other things, other areas of struggle, other areas of spiritual struggle, other areas even of mental illness. And what happens is we end up isolated. So here's the deal. You need the community that is the Church of Jesus Christ. So for hurting people, which I think isn't that all of us at some point though, Tim?
Yeah.
But for hurting people, I think ultimately remember the Savior. Remember Jesus loves his bride, the church. It's hard sometimes, but you can't love Jesus and hate his wife. And so part of your healing will be through a community of people who love you. So the fact that you had a bad experience in one place doesn't mean there aren't other places. But through that process, you're going to need fellow Christians in this thing called church.
You know, the truth is, Paul in 2 Corinthians 1, 3 and 4, he talks about the Father of mercies, the God of all comfort. He's the one who comforts us in all of our, those moments in our life when it's not the way it's supposed to be, when it's tough, when we've gone through trauma, when life doesn't make sense. He comforts us in those moments so that we in turn can be conduit through which he offers that message of encouragement to someone else.
That's so good.
That's soul care ministry. That's what Paul says to us.
Yeah.
And there are people out there, God uniquely prepares them. They have the gift of helps. You know that people often go to them for prayer, advice, direction. There's just something about them. They're the people you say, wow, they're walking in the room and everybody else is bailing out.
Yeah.
God has those people out there. But when you get isolated and alone, when you feel ostracized, when you feel like, well, and you're around people, the truth is, too, Ed, some people, when they're going through tough times like this, they're exhausting.
Yeah, that's right.
You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like you want to run or move the other direction. That's me saying, listen, I'm called to that ministry.
Yeah, this is what you do. Yeah.
We get that. Yeah. But somewhere we've got to do something here.
Right. And what I would say is you don't have to be that person for everybody, right? So maybe, and you're in a counseling field, so many people in counseling, that's what they do, but they in and themselves have a way to self-care, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're a follower of Jesus and you're listening to this, you're like, man, I'm going to be that person for everybody, that's not realistic either, right? So, but you can say, I'm going to be that for some person. I'm going to help carry someone through a hard time and a difficult time. I have a full-time job, but until recently, I was also the pastor of a church, and I had a small group in my home. And I made a decision. I can't do everything. I'm a volunteer pastor of a church. I'm full-time at Lifeway Research for the last decade. But I had a small group of people in my home, and I would help carry them at times. Sometimes they were sick. Sometimes they were struggling. Sometimes we had some deeper issues. It's 10, 15 people, but I can do something. So what I would say is all of us have to reflect that Christ-like compassion. And if I can do it with one or two people, but then everyone else is doing it with one or two people, and some people like you or people in counseling are doing it with 20 people, or someone in pastoral counseling is doing it with 5 people, then ultimately we become that carrying church that's carrying one of those burdens.
So we're running on two rails here, Ed. One is we're speaking to those who are battling and struggling right now and saying, listen, seek out services.
Yeah.
Do whatever it takes. Collaborative care. Get everybody involved. There's a great Stonewall Jackson quote that says, get everything involved in the fight. Get everything in the fight. And the truth is, when you're overwhelmed and you're lost, you're depressed, you're in a spin, you've got to press.
That's right. That cycle thing really, that's really true. People, I mentioned the shame cycle or whatever.
Sure.
It really is. And part of what we have to do is help people break out of that destructive cycle. And part of what some of our listeners may need to do is break out of that destructive cycle by saying to somebody, I need somebody to talk to.
And the way we best do it is by being the church.
Yeah.
That's the other rail we're running on here. So we're challenging people to step up. Do something.
Which comes back to why me, who's focused on churches and their health and evangelism and church planting, why would I care about this? A church without the broken is a broken church. A church that's not caring is not caring. And so for me, I mean, I look at this and I'm a I don't know what I am, but I'm sort of a church consultant speaker or whatever, motivational speaker, living in a van down by the river. If I'm going to help churches be churches and be healthy churches, they're going to have unhealthy people. So part of helping a church be healthy is to have unhealthy people, or else ultimately what we've done is we've created an Instagram photo of what a church is rather than life on life with what a church looks like or should look like.
Yeah. Ed, if it's true that the number one issue in the church today is pornography, for example, the silence and the shame, the stigma in a lot of our homes, we lock it down as a big secret.
Yeah.
Only, by the way, to fester in that cesspool.
Yeah.
Of chaos.
That's right.
Because it brings it. Flip it on its side. Depression is real. Just one example of many issues that people wrestle with. And the tragedy is we've got a pandemic, basically, of suicide that's out there. And people are afraid to even talk about that.
That's right.
Ed, we don't go there, but we've got to go there. We've got people listening right now who are terrified.
Yeah.
They're terrified maybe their son or daughter is going to do that very thing.
Yep. Yep.
Ed, I know that, and I'm grateful to God that there's a new day here where the conversation's beginning, but this is embryonic in a lot of ways. I want you to kind of draw the strings on this for us, and I want you to go to our listener and just say, hey, what's the big takeaway? What's the what for here? Remember this. If you remember one or two things from today's broadcast, doesn't matter where you're at, God really is in the midst of this. Speak to them, Ed.
Yeah, so we knew each other before some of these things, but after Rick and Kay Warren's son committed suicide, we know, and Matthew, by the way, Matthew is his name. I wrote an article for CNN about some of these issues. You and I kind of increased our partnership and our friendship because
yes,
we see this as an issue, because it seems to me this is a moment, and it's a heartbreaking moment, but through Rick and Kay's pain, we got to talk more about things, about a whole lot of other people's pain. And they're allowing the Lord to use their pain to talk about a whole lot of people who are hurting when we couldn't before. And so what happens is, I mean, the reality exists. My cousin, you know, sometimes we call it suicide by cop, and intentionally took his own life by going and running into police officers with weapons. I mean, so this is real stuff. This is real people hurting in real ways. And I think that our society, because it's a very individualistic society, right? We're all autonomous individuals. We're like, we're not supposed to care. Okay. Maybe in our family, we don't even talk about it, right? But here's what I would say. The Church of Jesus Christ has to be countercultural by conviction and say, this is a place that cares. Again, back to what I've been saying. This is a carrying church. We're going to carry one another's burdens. We're going to bear with one another through pain and hurt. And here's the thing I think. As kind of the church gets marginalized because of what it believes, now we don't know what the future holds, but it appears that churches are being pushed to the margins of society. Okay, you want to be a church that actually people say, something's going on there. I want to find out more. I want to go even visit. Be a church that's known as carrying burdened people, right? And people will beat a path to your door if they know that their family member will be loved here who's been ostracized another place. Maybe if they'll be loved. It's really just living the way of Jesus. And if people are hurting, then we respond. Now, in a sense, this is a plague today, right? We talked about suicide and the epidemic. Let's call it a plague. Here's why. Because Rodney Stark wrote a book called Cities of God. And ultimately, in that book, he talks about how Christianity grew in the late second and early third century. You know, it really didn't grow, as a lot of people think, in the first century. It wasn't explosive. But in the second and third century, it did. So he writes about why. Here's what he explains. What he says is that there were plagues that swept through the empire. Now, he's got the documents. Actually, Roman emperors speak, or a letter to a Roman emperor says, that these Christians basically care not only for their own sick and dead, but for ours as well. So when the plague came in, the Christians stepped up. When they stepped up, people said, we want to know why. And the gospel, the message got out, and the church explodes in the second and third century. We're in a plague today, an epidemic of suicide. We're in a time today when brokenness is all around us. The pressure of our society is hurting people all around. If the church will step up in this plague and say, this will be a place where you can have these hard conversations. We'll love you through this. We'll carry you along at times and seasons of your life, and you'll carry others. I think ultimately it can be the church that God has called it to be.
Yeah. I don't know where you're at right now, what you're going through, but I know this, God does. And he sees it, and he hasn't abandoned you. He hasn't forgotten you. He's there, and he's in the middle of it. Our prayer today is that the church would awaken. And by the way, that's not somebody else. That's about you and me. stepping up, letting God work in and through us to what? Bring hope and healing.
That's right.
That's what God's called us to do. Ed, thanks for joining us here on Family Talk. What a dynamic program. Can't wait to have you back.
Thank you, my friend. Good to talk to you.
You've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with our guest host, Dr. Tim Clinton, discussing mental illness in the church with Dr. Ed Stetzer. This isn't a topic we talk about very often, yet it's an issue that touches so many lives and so many families. Some have even called it a plague or an epidemic. So I pray that this program has inspired you to think about how you can help your church to be a safe place for those who are suffering. And if someone you know needs a Christian counselor, go to drjamesdobson.org for a link to help you find one in your area. And if you want more information about our guests today, we'll have those links there as well. Lastly, we are giving away a Kindle Fire HD. All you have to do is go to facebook.com/drjamesdobson for details on how to enter in this giveaway. Now, the deadline is this Sunday, November 13th, so do not delay. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for joining us today, and be sure to come back next time for another edition of Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.